This is 89.9 WWNL. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. The 4th of July weekend is upon us, and several events in town examine freedom, independence, or the lack thereof. Whether you're in the mood for conversation with a stellar ballerina, a spiritual healing, or a classic stage drama, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. American Ballet Theater principal dancer Misty Copeland makes her debut this weekend at Essence Festival. The ballerina made history last year as the first African-American woman to reach principal dancer in American Ballet Theater's 75-year history. I caught up with Misty on a previous visit to New Orleans. Our conversation began with a look at her stellar career that got a jump start when she discovered ballet as a teenager.
Yeah, it definitely happened suddenly. I was in San Pedro, California, one of six kids, literally just living a very normal life when I thought I should audition for the dance team at my public school. I always had a love of music and enjoyed moving to it. Never thought in a million years it would become my life and my profession. But I was discovered then when I auditioned for this dance team and was offered a full scholarship to take ballet classes, and that first class was at my Boys and Girls Club on a basketball court, and it happened so quickly. They realized that I had incredible potential, and I only trained for 4 years before I moved to New York City to become a professional.
Wow. What was it about dance that attracted you so?
As a young girl, I was extremely shy and just kind of hiding between my siblings, and there was something about music that was an escape for me from just my life, from the hardships and, you know, moving a lot and just always feeling so nervous about things. And there was something that drew me to movement and music that just felt so natural and innate in me. It's always been an escape for me, even to this day. You know, my life is so hectic and crazy with so many incredible things, but I find comfort every time I can step into a ballet class or I'm on stage. It's like I'm in this amazing, beautiful little bubble.
There are not many African-American ballerinas.
No.
Did you face social pressures as you followed your passion?
I'm very fortunate and happy that during my short time of training as a student, that wasn't something that was brought to my attention. I was kind of allowed to just learn and progress the way any other dancer would who wasn't black without having those pressures of knowing there aren't many like you. You might not survive. And it wasn't until I became a professional that I really understood the importance of me being in American Ballet Theater, the only African-American woman in the first 10 years of my professional career. I was by myself. And it was then that I realized I want to know more about the people that came before me. There have to have been other African-American females. And finding out that history, doing my own research, learning about Raven Wilkinson and Janet Collins, Virginia Johnson, Alicia Graff, Aisha Ash, there are so many. And it's kind of like I have this platform and I want to be a vessel for their stories as well.
What would you say you're most proud of today?
Having the courage to continue to use my art form to grow as a human being, being a mentor to so many dancers that, you know, I never saw myself in that way. I never thought I'd be able to communicate in any other way other than through my body in dancing. And to be able to articulate and share my experiences as a mentor, I think, is so extremely important, especially in the African-American community.
In your memoir, Life in Motion, you call yourself an unlikely ballerina. Why?
When people typically think of a ballerina, I don't think that they would think of a 5'2" brown girl with large breasts and big muscles. And I also don't think that they would, you know, particularly think that someone could start at the age of 13 and become a professional by the age of 17, you know, not having the typical background of most dancers, you know, that come from a place where there are resources and availability to classical training. I didn't have any of those things, but there is something inside of me that was meant to be in this place and to be a ballerina. And though it's unlikely, I think that we need to set a new standard of what dancers are, and it should be something that you're bringing from within, not what you look like on the outside.
American Ballet Theatre principal dancer Misty Copeland will be at Essence Festival on Saturday at the Montreal Convention Center. You can catch her at 2:45 p.m. on the Empowerment Experience Stage and at 3:45 p.m. at the Beauty and Style Expo. The events are free and open to the public. Congo Square is ground zero as a sacred ceremony honoring African ancestors gets underway this weekend. The Ashe Cultural Arts Center presents its annual Maafa commemoration, remembering the Middle Passage, the transatlantic slave trade. Ashe Executive Director Carol Bebel and Cultural Programs Consultant and Bambula 2000 percussionist Luther Gray are here. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having us again.
Maafa, M-A-A-F-A. What does it mean and where does this word come from?
Maafa means horrific tragedy. And it comes from the Kiswahili language.
Kiswahili. Is this synonymous with the Swahili people?
Yes. Swahili language is a vast language that's used throughout East and Central Africa.
Describe this experience. What takes place at the ceremony?
The Maafa begins at 7 a.m. The sound of the drums will start to ring through Congo Square and through our city.
The whole experience is intended to allow us to really be thoughtful about thinking about the past that we have inherited and also being intentional about thinking about ourselves as the beginners of the future. And owning our responsibility to do as well for the future as our ancestors, given the past that we have had, particularly the period of enslavement, what they were able to help to bring forward for us. And so our theme is the past we inherit, the future we create.
A person is never truly dead until they're forgotten. And so when we, in Congo Square, which is an ancestral place, when we call on our ancestors and then we pour water, everyone calls out the names of their own personal ancestors. And then we call out the names of our heroes and sheroes from our own community and our own faiths. And so it really begins to connect us all to our lineage.
And the procession that follows, where does it take you?
We're accompanied by drummers, dancers, and Black Indians of New Orleans. We have the Fayaya Mandingo Warriors, the Fonga Lasibo African Dance Company, the Nubian Messengers, drummers from Brooklyn, New York, as well as local drummers. We make a stop at St. Augustine Church at the Tomb of the Unknown Slave. There's a marker there, and then we continue and we stop at the Louisiana Supreme Court building and talk about the significance of that building in terms of Plessy versus Ferguson, rights of people over time. Then we stop at Cafe Maspero's and the Royal Omni Hotel located, and that's where the largest slave auctions were taking place. We pause there. And we come up to Decatur Tocantai, where you see the Bienville statue. We stop there and we talk about how the French claimed the land. We go into Waldenburg Park and we go to John Scott's Ocean Song sculpture, where we have poetry, songs, and we finalize our commemorance. And then we go to the river and we pay our respects to our ancestors.
The river is very important in this ceremony.
Because, you know, we came on those ships. The embarkment was basically on both sides of the river, oftentimes on the Algiers side. We pause there and we really remember and we give thanks. And it's a healing ceremony. Everyone wears white. We have flowers. I think it's a spiritual rejuvenation that people have.
What is the ceremony's relevance to the July 4th weekend?
There was a national movement to add this kind of a celebration to that Juneteenth weekend stretch out that happens across the country. And so we kind of picked this weekend because it was a spotlight weekend. It was a time when we thought that it would be advantageous to be able to, in the middle of huge celebrations that are like about independence and all of that, to be focusing on this. The period of time that people were working with was between Juneteenth and 19th of June and that 4th of July weekend, which is related, of course, to the traveling of the word about the Emancipation Proclamation to people in the South. So all of those things kind of came together with the notion of taking on the 4th of July weekend when we were going to be doing a lot of celebration about liberty and freedom. It's all about the importance of reminding us where we came from, where we are, and where we still have to go.
What other events are new this year that's associated with the Maafa commemoration?
This year, we are partnering with the National Park Service's Centennial Celebration. And as part of their centennial celebration, they're bringing in Dr. Sonia Sanchez, who's the poet laureate of the National Park Service this year. She's a poet that has been active since the 1960s through the civil rights, the Black Power movements. Her writing, her journals, her inspiration has been essential and very important to our people over the last 40 years.
She will be showing us some footage from a recent documentary done on her. She'll be reading as well. And Nicholas Payton will be there. And along with her will be some of our fabulous wordsmiths from here.
Now, is the Maafa commemoration, in your opinion, making a difference in healing our community?
I think that that's a very good question, and it's a very hard one to answer. What I will say is that what we aspire to and what people tell us happens for them is that they find themselves in a place where they can hear something different than just the anger or the hurt and the suffering that comes from having been a part of the lineage that we are. They see the opportunity to be able to transform that into something that is more positive and productive for themselves and in the lives of others. And that's what we aspire to. We can't change the past. We can only do a modicum of help in terms of taking care of the pain that people have. Suffering is something that has to be worked on in a different way. It is about being able to unpack it and to help people to take the power of that hurt and to be able to apply the energy of it to something different. And I think we do a good job by virtue of using the spiritual realm, but also using the opportunity when people are open to hear something. So in that moment, we can make the decision that we are going to remember the sacrifice of people who knew that there was nothing going to get better for them, who went through what they did because they had children and grandchildren before them that they were transferring that pain and suffering to. And if we can think about their lives, then we've got the power to really essentially make the world what it needs to be so that it serves us and our futures better.
Carol Bebel and Luther Gray, thanks.
Thank you.
The Ashe Cultural Arts Center's Maafa commemoration kicks off Saturday morning at 7 at Congo Square in Louis Armstrong Park, 701 North Rampart Street. It is free and open to the public. White attire is suggested. More info at ashecac.org. Poet Sonia Sanchez will perform Friday evening at 6 at the Ashe Powerhouse Theater, 1731 Barone Street. That event is also free. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNM, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. In the Marigny, a Spanish tragedy unfolds as In Good Company presents Federico Garcia Lorca's classic work, The House of Bernarda Alba. New Orleans native Kathleen McManus returns to town in the starring role. She is joined by actress Sherry Marina. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane. It's great to be here.
This is an intense drama. What's being explored in this work?
This is Kathleen. I play Bernarda. The catchword is duende, which is a Spanish word that has many meanings. It has to do with passion, moving toward the darker side of our nature, an embrace of death, which, of course, in Spanish culture with bullfighting and even the word matador means lover of death. That whole sort of fatalism about where life is heading, which is toward the end. It's a piece about women with limited options. It's a piece about class. It's a piece about authoritarianism, Bernarda is a my way or the highway kind of person. And not coincidentally, it coincides with the rise of Franco in Spain in the 1930s.
This is Sherry. I play Poncia. At the beginning of the play, it is the day of the funeral of Bernarda's second husband, and she declares that there will be 8 years of mourning in that house. No one can go outside. You can't go and date. She has 5 daughters, so they will be locked up basically for 8 years. However, the oldest daughter has been promised to a suitor in town, and this suitor has also been having an affair with one of the younger daughters secretly, which creates all the conflict.
So tell us what attracted you to your roles and what you bring to the performance.
I am a maid, the head house servant, but I've been with Bernarda in the Alba House for 30 years. I came with the first husband. Bernarda and Poncia have a very sisterly relationship. However, because of the class issues, we aren't really able to be friends in a traditional way because I'm not of her status.
That's right.
But I am a confidant. I think I'm one of the few people in the house that will stand up to her.
You helped raise the kids.
I'm like a member of the family. And she is always saying, you know, you need to stay in your place. You're my servant, nothing else. And for me, as a woman of color, to make the choice, because I asked our director, I was like, oh, no, I want to play Poncia. And there was some question about it, like, should I have a woman of color of a certain age playing a maid? How is that going to look? What message are we sending? But Poncia is so multi-layered. It's not cartoonish or offensive in any way. So I was excited to play a maid.
And Sherry's not the only actor of color in our production. Carol Sutton plays my mother, and Lakeisha
Glover
plays one
Magdalena.
Of the daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Garcia Lorca himself never got to see it. Mm-hmm. He was murdered before the play premiered. So part of it for me is, let's do one for Lorca.
Tell me more about his life. What was going on when he wrote this work?
It's the 1930s in Spain, but he was a bit of a world citizen. He had spent a little time in New York City. He was a friend of Dali and Picasso, so he's a contemporary of some of these giants in the arts and culture. Simultaneously, what's going on in Germany, the Weimar Republic, what's going on in the United States is FDR's administration and the WPA, the Works Progress Administration. The theater in particular was really having this thriving moment.
Yeah.
The arts and artists are really banding together. Well, of course, this is quite threatening to authoritarianism. And Lorca had the great misfortune to return to Spain at a time when he couldn't have been more endangered by his voice and his posse and his sexual orientation. He was a gay man. I'm not sure to what extent he was out, but certainly his friends knew it. And certainly the regime who took him out must have known it as well. He was murdered by forces loyal to Franco. His remains have never been recovered. And this happened to him when he was in his 30s.
Yeah.
He could have gone on to become a pretty interesting playwright in the vein of Tennessee Williams or in the vein of William Butler Yeats.
Right.
So many possibilities that we'll never know.
It seems to me freedom is being explored on many different levels in this production.
Or the lack thereof.
Right.
How you chafe against someone who wants to take your freedom away. Bernarda stands in for Franco. She uses the word my, nothing, and silence. In fact, her first word and her last word is the word silence, which is so beautiful in Spanish, silencio. But it packs a punch in English as well. It's the very first thing she says, and it's the very last thing she says, and it's the last word that ends the play. So this notion of silencing people, which is so repugnant to most of us, she's a bit of a monster.
I think this idea of freedom and independence and dealing with a parent as well, at that parental child relationship. When do you push away from them? When do you lean in? I think that that is something that's explored. Like, how much am I willing to sacrifice to please my parent? I think the daughters struggle with that.
Poncia has a couple of heart-to-hearts with a couple of the daughters.
Yeah, a few of the daughters.
And it's interesting how in this class structure that young people are more comfortable with the person who wiped their bottom more than they are with the person who brought them into this world. I think no matter what culture you come from, that is true. It's as true now as it ever was. But Bernarda does have one little scene where she really tries. She tries to have a heart-to-heart with the daughter who's getting ready to be married. It's a pretty abysmal example of the mother-daughter, here's what marriage will be like, conversation.
But whereas, you know, Poncia talks to them about sex and, you know, having fun in your marriage, that type of thing.
Bernarda tells them to keep their mouth shut.
Right.
And there'll be no strife. So,
what can audiences take away from this work as we are looking to Independence Day weekend?
We have so many hot button topics going on in our country right now. And I think many of the themes of the play speak to that. My hope would be that the audience is a little introspective, like, oh, what do I do on a daily basis that may be oppressive to someone?
On the flip side, who's oppressing me? Right. Am I taking things I don't need to take?
Bernarda talks often about, oh, the neighbors can see.
I care about what other people think.
That's another takeaway I would hope that the audience is like, what am I doing that's really just for show and what's real?
And
I think if we get to the real, then it makes us a better community.
Kathleen McManus and Sherry Marina, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having us. Always good to see you.
In Good Company presents Federico Garcia Lorca's The House of Bernarda Alba, currently running at the Tigerman Den, 3113 Royal Street. Final performances run Wednesday through Sunday, 8 p.m. More info at albanola.brownpapertickets.com. And we have something in our Lenyap Corner. A spectacular show will light up the 4th of July sky as dueling barges shoot off fireworks on the Mississippi River downtown beginning at 9 p.m. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at wwno.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. Have a happy holiday weekend. I'm Diane Mack.